The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now to the reaction about the new rules in respect of close contacts for children. This is that close contact children will be able to remain in school if they have no symptoms of the virus. Joining me now is Professor Martin Cormacan, HSE lead on infection control Galway, to discuss what this means for transmission rates. Martin, I'm sure people will look at this and think, just commonsensically, you would expect that if you have a load of children who have been exposed as close contacts to somebody who has COVID, surely you vastly increase the risk, even if they are asymptomatic, to leave them in a closed environment with other children and teachers.
So the key point here, I suppose, that we're all agreed on is that education is absolutely critical for children and for all of us. So keeping children in school is really important for their overall welfare and indeed for all of us. What we're seeing in schools is that there isn't, with the measures we have in school to manage the risk of spread, that is working very well. So what we need to be very clear is that children who have symptoms, we're saying, should be out of school. What we're talking about is children who may have been exposed, who have no symptoms, and the risk there is very low based on what we're seeing in terms of the likelihood that those children who are contacts in school will be positive is low. And the evidence that we're seeing is that the measures that we have in effect in school, all of the measures that are in effect in school, are very effective. But the really key point to be clear on is that children who have symptoms, nothing has changed in relation to children who have symptoms. Children who have symptoms need to stay home as they did before. This is only in relation to those children who are well and who may have been exposed in school. And we know that the vast majority of those children do not have COVID. And it's a real harm to children to miss school. And many of these children are missing school. And they don't have an infection and they're not sick. And that is a real consequence for them in terms of their education.
And what happens if those children are close contacts of somebody with COVID at home? Are they allowed to attend school in that instance?
So household contacts are different, and that's because what we see is that if you have contact with somebody in your home who's got COVID, the chance that you have got infection is much higher. And that's understandable because obviously the people that you live with, you have a much more direct interaction, a much more intimate interaction with your household than you have with the general population. And of course, our households, our homes, are not a controlled setting like school is. So in the home setting, we see that people are much more likely to get infected in the school setting. And I think this is a credit to how effectively the schools and the teachers and pupils are working. The guidance that's there is that we've seen that the risk of spread in school is much lower than it is in the home setting.
Does the data bear that out? Because I think people will look at the experience of the pandemic so far and the sort of things that became the norms. Be outdoors wherever possible. Don't be in an indoor setting. Wear masks all the time. Even if you're outdoors, stay 6 feet away from each other. With the best will in the world, schools aren't achieving those targets. They're not all wearing masks. They can't do it outdoors. They are indoors. They can't be 6 feet away from each other. How is it possible, therefore, that COVID isn't spreading significantly if you've got close contacts all in the one room?
Well, there's very good reason to believe that COVID spreads less from children than it does from adults. So that's an important factor in this, and that's been a picture that we've seen. Even with the variants that have come along, children appear to be less likely to spread the infection. And the organisation, the way the schools work, there are lots of good measures in place in the school about distancing, about keeping kids in the same group, teachers keeping distance as much as they can, and those measures are proving effective. And you can see that in the percentages of the number of children in the 4 to 12-year-old age group, for example, who are being tested has increased, but the percentage of positivity has declined since children went back to school. So in the last week of the school holidays, about 14.5% of kids who in the 4 to 12 age group who were tested were positive, and that's actually come down now to about 5%, so about 1 in 20. So what we're seeing is that there's a, as I said, those measures do work. They're working very well. And as I said, that's a credit to how well teachers, pupils and parents are working. And again, I know I've said this, but it's absolutely central to this, is that we're talking here about kids who are well, who have, may have been in contact, but they are well. If they've got symptoms, nothing has changed in relation to kids who've got symptoms. And we do know that people who are symptomatic are more likely to be infectious. And I suppose the other point that's really important coming into the winter season is that we're seeing already is that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID, is not going to be the only virus around this winter, we believe. It's not going to be like last winter. So children who may have other viral infections, if they've got symptoms of an acute viral infection, they should be at home, even if they don't have the COVID virus, because they might have another virus if they've got symptoms of acute viral infection.
That being in both cases, if they're symptomatic, why is there no mandate for testing if they are asymptomatic? So if you know that there is a child within the class who has tested COVID positive, why are the other children not recommended to be tested?
Well, testing is an intervention. It is not particularly easy for many children. I have known, and indeed most of people will know, children who find it very distressing, and the testing needs to be done in a situation where it's likely to add benefit in terms of being used to that child and to others around it. And what we're seeing is that the finding of positivity on testing is low. And if the children are symptomatic and if all of the measures we put in place are required, then that should control the risk, that manages the risk of spread. So testing has been a really important part of our response through the process to date. Processes are changing now as we move to a different state. You know, we can see that now that a very high proportion of the population are vaccinated, the way that we're going to manage this virus is going to transition over the next period of time. And that's going to happen globally, not just in Ireland. There will be that transition. And transition we're all nervous when something we've gotten used to is changing. So it's understandable that people have concerns about it. But again, I think the key point here is that these are well children. They may have been exposed, and we know that the vast majority of them do not have infection.
Should different families, Martin,
to be as normal as possible.
Should different families take a different interpretation depending on their own situation? Because let's imagine, for instance, if you have several generations of a family living in the one house, and you may have somebody who is very elderly, they may be coming to the end of a several month period after they've had their second vaccine. It may be a while before the booster. There may be somebody at home who's immunocompromised. Should they look at these guidelines through a different lens and say, well, to be on the safe side, we're going to keep our child home, or we're going to get our child tested?
I think you have to. So we want to give guidance that's as clear as possible, but I think we also have to recognise that those parents make decisions in the best interest of their children, and they look at their family set up. And of course, if they have concern about their child's health, if they're concerned about their own health, then they're going to talk to their doctor. If they're worried about their own health or the health of somebody in their family, they'll talk to their doctor. And so people will make, that's the nature of life, I suppose, is we all make those kind of decisions from time to time. And people have different levels. People deal with the fear of COVID, which we all have. People deal with it in different ways. But the advice that we're giving is very clear of what we believe is in the best interest of the child. But I guess you have to recognize that parents do make decisions about what they think is in the best interest of the child. That's our job as parents. We all do that. But we're quite clear on what our advice is about what's in the best interest of the child. But of course, every household is different, and people, we all take that into account.
The advice that you are giving, is it consistent across all educational settings for children?
So what we're saying is for children who in 3 to 13 years old, who are in all settings where they come together in a sort of an education or educational type setting, if they are identified as contacts in that setting, that then they do not need testing and they can continue to attend in that setting. If they're household contacts, as I said, that's quite different. And of course, again, if they have any symptoms, it's different. But as long as they're well and their contact was in that setting, then in that age group, we're saying that they can continue to attend and they don't need to be tested.
What if they are close contacts outside of a household setting and outside of an educational setting? So let us imagine that they have a peer group that they're going to, GAA or rugby or whatever else it might be with. What happens in that instance?
Well, in situations where there's an outbreak in a particular setting, for example, if you say if a club or something like that where there's an outbreak, there will be there will be public health advice around managing what's happening in that outbreak, and that is dealt with. And so I suppose that raises a key part of all of this, is that while this is the guidance, but public health will do risk assessments in situations where there's evidence of disease, and they may apply a different, so that risk assessment by public health remains the backdrop to all of this. So this is the general approach. It's clear as it can be. But in a situation where, for example, there's an outbreak in a setting that where children are meeting, where there's known to have been a number of cases of disease, particularly if people are getting sick, then there will be a public health risk assessment, and then whatever measures are appropriate will be applied in that setting.
But there is a possibility that public health may say, in that instance, you are a close contact in a non-educational setting, you now must have to stay at home. Whereas if you were a close contact in an educational setting, you wouldn't. That could happen.
Well, there's a possibility that if in any situation, and this didn't start with COVID, this was always the case, in any situation where you've got evidence of spread of disease, and that people are suffering illness as a result of spread of infection, it's always been the case that public health have a role in assessing what is happening and offering advice on how to control the risk. So what's happening in that respect in relation to COVID is the same as would always have happened in the past, for example, with other infectious diseases. Where there's a spread of infection and people are suffering harm, public health have always been there to give advice on how to manage that risk. I should mention that there's one also that the special needs education sector, there is some variation in relation to the special needs education sector, where there will be public health risk assessments in that sector as well.
Why?
Because children who have special educational needs may be more vulnerable to the consequences of infection and may be more vulnerable to spread. So it's just to put an extra layer of care around that, but also making sure that children who have special educational needs also need their education, and that's really important.
Is the data, and I should say, by the way, we're talking to Professor Martin Cormacan, who is HSE Clinical Lead on Infection Control. Is the data revealing a different level of infection rate among schools or classes for students with special needs, or is that a supposition and a concern?
It's a caution, because the special educational needs sector, obviously many of the children attending, as I say, as the name says, they have special educational needs. Many of them have special needs, so it's a decision to proceed more cautiously in that particular sector.
Huge amount of questions coming in. I'll try to get through as many, Martin, as I can. If children are out currently due to a close contact, can they therefore go back to school on Monday?
On Monday, if they're, again, really important, if they're asymptomatic and if they're a school, if they're a contact in the educational setter, then from Monday they would be able to go back to school. So asymptomatic, so the kid is well, they've had a contact in the educational setting, then they will be able to go back to school on Monday. But as I say, really important that they're well.
A lot of text along these lines. I'm a teacher. Did anyone think of us when changing these rules and our families?
Yep.
So whatever about the mutual transmission between the children, what of the adults who are in the classrooms with these children?
Yes, we are concerned for everybody's well-being, of course, and there is no evidence that teachers are at increased risk compared to the general population. Of course, teachers can get COVID, as we all can. We know that certain occupational sectors are at high risk, and particular people who work in the healthcare sector are certainly at a higher risk. But what we have seen here, and indeed a recent publication in the British Medical Journal of the experience in the United Kingdom, indicates that teachers and teachers' households are at not at an increased risk of hospitalisation compared to the general population.
Again, there's a lot of text coming in along these lines, essentially that anybody who has the experience of particularly a small child going to school knows that they function largely as a petri dish and get all kinds of everything. And a text saying, what about the otherwise well children? Slight runny nose, they get a negative PCR test. Do you send them back to school or do you not? This is more the issue at the moment and will get worse as winter goes on.
If it's just a runny nose, then we're not saying that kids who are well and have just a runny nose, the current guidance is that they can go to school. If they have other symptoms of a viral infection, if they're fever, if they feel sick, then they should be at home. But if it's just a runny nose, the current guidance is and has been all along, the guidance about that hasn't changed recently. The guidance, people, of course, have been fearful and many of these children have been tested. But the guidance on this has been for quite a while that children who are otherwise well and have a bit of a runny nose can go to school. So that isn't changing. But if children have, and parents obviously use their judgment, and parents know their child and they know what's normal for them and they know when they're sick and they're unwell. And if they have symptoms of an acute viral infection, then other than a runny nose, then they should be away from school. I would just say that I know it's an expression we've all used, but of course children are children and they're not petri dishes. They're the key to our future, aren't they? And their education is vital to them. So it's really important that they have access to that.
You know that line about hard cases making bad law? There's a lot of text coming in of potential hard cases. I'll give you one as case in point because it's being represented a lot. What do we do if, for instance, on Sunday PM, a friend texts to say, my kids are close contacts after a party or a sleepover? Do they go back to school?
Well, if your children are close, if you know your child is a close contact in a household setting, including in a place where there's been a sleepover, then they should not be going to school. But one of the other thing I suppose that's really important here is that the fact that you've been in touch with somebody who has now been designated a contact, that has never required you to do anything different. If a contact, in terms of the precautions that we're talking about somebody who's been in touch with somebody who's known to be infectious. If suppose I have the infection and you are told that you're a contact of me, people who've been in touch with you have never needed to restrict their movements or get tested. That's never been an advice, not only here, it's never been the advice anywhere. So if I have the disease and you were in the house with me, then you're a household contact of me. But the other people who live with you are not, there's no restrictions on them and there never was.
We heard recently reports from the States, a number of medics, I think with the CDC, saying that the expectation over the coming months would be that everybody would either end up in a position where they had had a vaccine or where they had had a disease. And this seems to be an issue in the text as well. Surely what we are seeing in primary school is a little thing called herd immunity, albeit in a certain population. Is that the underlying logic, that you will achieve herd immunity within this narrow demographic by allowing it to spread within the schools?
An interesting question, and it'll take me a minute to answer that. But so the first thing is, I suppose I think it's really important here is the a distinction between infection and disease. So a lot of children who get infected with many viruses, of which, SARS is CoV-2, the one that we're all concerned about now, but lots of other viruses as well that we've all got infected with the children that caused us no disease. For example, 90% of children are infected with Epstein-Barr virus by the time they're age 5 in most Western countries. And it doesn't cause them, the vast majority of those children suffer no disease from it. So infection is one thing and disease is another. And disease is really important. And infection, we all have lots of infections, you know, that. So herd immunity, the idea of herd immunity is that you reach a level of immunity in the population in which a virus can no longer circulate. I think as we've come through this pandemic, we've become less confident that that's going to happen with this virus. It may become more like there are four other coronaviruses that cause colds that go around all the time. They circulate all the time. They peak in the winter. I think increasingly it looks likely that what we'll see is that this virus will probably be with us for a long time, but that it will do a lot less harm And the reason it did so much harm at the beginning was because nobody had any immunity to it. So when you got infection, if you were vulnerable, you got a very severe disease.
But reading between the lines, Martin, is it a fair assumption, therefore, that the way that you build the immunity in the unvaccinated or the currently unvaccinatable is you allow them to be, albeit possibly without the potential of severe disease, exposed to the virus?
Well, it's not that we're seeking to make that happen in school. It's recognizing that, you know, there will be a number of viruses will circulate this winter, as they did every winter, and that children need to be in school. So you manage the risk as best you can to keep everybody as safe as you can. But it's really important that children are in school. And what we believe we're outlining is a process that gives a balance between keeping everything as safe as is reasonably practical and also making sure that children keep in school. But this isn't a program to spread the virus in schools. That's not what we're doing. There will be some spread of viruses amongst people who are vaccinated and non-vaccinated. But what we've seen is that where you get the virus in people who are vaccinated, you get much less severe disease. But also we've seen that children who get the virus, even if they're not vaccinated, rarely get severe disease. Not never. There are very few nevers in infectious disease, but the vast majority of children, even unvaccinated, who get infected with this virus get a very mild disease, and many of them get no disease at all, because infection and disease are not always the same thing.
Martin, thank you very much. That's Professor Martin Cormacan, who is HSE Clinical Lead on Infection Control.